There used to be small black and white advertisements that peeked out from the pages of supermarket tabloids, comic books, women's magazines, and popular mechanics that went, "We need new ideas for recording. Song poems wanted for new songs and records. Your songs or poems may earn money for you. Liberace says song poems are needed." That's George Liberace of George Liberace Songsmiths, Inc. These unassuming ads hint at a rung in the music business that may often be overlooked on the climb to the top. People who put their hearts, souls, and often their savings into recordings they hope would change their lives. Like this one.
Lemon pies and butterflies, yellow submarines, corn on the cob and tangerines. I like yellow things, yellow tulips.
That's the song "I Like Yellow Things," sung by Bobby Blake and written by Teal Faulkner. It's contained in a new collection of song poems that are called the American Song Poem Anthology. Do you know the difference between Big Wood and Brush? That's the title song. Phil Milstein is the producer of this compilation and a song poem aficionado. He joins us from member station WBUR in Boston. Mr. Milstein, thanks for being with us.
Greetings.
And out at the studios of member station KCLU in Thousand Oaks, California, is a man named Gene Merlino, who is a professional singer and musician whose thumbprints and voice prints are all over some of these song poems. Mr. Merlino, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Mr. Milstein, first, what's the working definition of a song poem?
Well, song poem was really just a euphemism for the word lyric. I think that it was designated because the entrepreneurs believed that their target audience for this sort of thing wouldn't even know what the word lyric means. And it's also meant to suggest some sense of the inner circle of the music industry, and that was part of the deception that they were putting before their audience.
Well, the deception, you describe this as not quite a criminal enterprise, but an exploitative one.
Yes, yes. And in fact, what they were trying to do is get average people to write lyrics, take poems out of their kitchen junk drawers and what have you, and foster the idea that these old poems and lyrics might potentially become a hit record, and that all they need to do is show some faith in their own work by putting a little bit of seed money into it, and the company will do the rest. They will take those words and set them to music and record them and then distribute that, promote it, and all the customer has to do is sit back and wait for the royalties to start rolling in.
And in the entire history of song poems, was there a single instance of one of them breaking through and becoming a well-known song?
Not really. If you're taking a strict definition of song poem, no.
Well, at the same time, what fascinated you about this was not the way the enterprise worked, but the conviction you heard in the songs.
Yes. I love pop music, but I'm aware that for great pop songwriters, there's some mediation between life experience and the craft of the finished work. And with song poem music, there is no such mediation. It's a much purer expression of human thought and human enterprise.
Mr. Merlino, how did you get enlisted in so many song poems?
Well, I started trying to get into studio work and session work, which we call basically. At that time, I wasn't able to really get into the pickings, like the jingles and commercials and motion picture work. Mm-hmm. So I got into doing demos. We call them demos. Mm-hmm. And I never heard of the word song poem, except maybe that's the way it was listed in ads. So I started doing them basically just to make a few bucks. And I started out with $2 a song. I'd go in, maybe do 30, 40 in a session, and sometimes even more. And over the years, I did over 10,000 of them.
Let's hear just one of them, if we could.
Green fingernails, I need you.
I need you.
Green fingernails, you betcha.
You betcha.
Green fingernails, don't say goodbye. Green fingernails, I love you till I die. Green fingernails, you make me sick.
Thank you.
Well, we could go on and on. This was recorded by a man named Gene Marshall. Do you know him, Mr. Merlino?
I certainly do. That's one of the names that I use. I also use John Muir. Basically, we were trying to kind of remain anonymous. There was a stigma if you did demos or song poems, if you will.
Mr. Merlino, do you remember this song at all?
Oh, yeah. I remember the good ones. I mean, if you have a little time, I've got some song sheets here that with some titles that
sure,
are priceless.
Sure.
Probably my favorite is Be My Shark. There was My Pig, where a guy writes songs about his pig. Tragedy at Columbine High. There's a perfect example. I can guarantee
that's
you that there
be
must
contemporary.
Have. Oh, yeah. And then I'm sure this last year or two, there's been thousands of songs written about 9/11. Mm-hmm. You know, and people write these things and expect them to become hits.
That's one of the interesting things about the industry is that the great public tragedies are a boom to the song poem business. I mean, that I've actually found a huge cache of them from dating back to the Titanic disaster all the way up to Princess Diana's death, et cetera. And these events, which bring out sort of an outcrying of public emotion, are often translated into song poem submissions. And it was said that JFK's assassination kept several companies afloat all by itself.
Loss, of course, is often is the artistic, inspirational last that informs many songs. Let's play one off of this CD.
I lost my girl to an Argentina cowboy. Out on the pampas, she's an all-around playboy. Tennessee singer, a tango dancer, various slinger, a great romancer. Why couldn't I woo and woo like that gaucho buckaroo? I'm a honcho wrangler, I don't know what to do. Now that I lost her, I'll never find her. She's gone away on an ocean liner.
This song is I Lost My Love to an Argentinian Cowboy, but I guess, Mr. Milstein, we don't know who's singing or who wrote it.
Well, that actually comes from near Boston. There was a company called Hallmark that's still going in some form down in Quincy, Mass. And they would, instead of creating their own musical tracks, would just buy up pre-recorded instrumental beds from other studios and just recycle them endlessly. And the vocalist knew the tracks so well that they wouldn't even write out a melody beforehand. They would just improvise the melody right off the top of their heads.
Mr. Well, I should mention, too, that we would get songs, customer music, where the customer would send in the music and the lyrics. It would occasionally come a song in there that was really excellent, and it seemed like to stick out like a sore thumb. As a matter of fact, if you don't mind, do we have any more time?
Yeah, sure. What do you want to do?
Here's a song I sang, back in 1962, and I don't even need Gee Music because I can remember it. In a Chinese garden, during the Feast of Lanterns, myriads of gleaming lanterns, someone offered a cup of tea. I never cared for tea, but now I care for tea. One look convinced me I loved her. There can never be another. My heart went thumpty-thump each time she'd drop a lump during the Feast of Lanterns. Now, that's the one song that I remember, the lyric from all the songs I've ever done, and it was priceless. So, actually, these sessions, for me, was a catharsis. I loved them. Yeah. I did big-time studio work all that during this period, but I would look forward, honestly, to doing these demos or song poem sessions more than I did 90% of all the work I did, which I made a whole lot more money doing. And again, I must add, too, you mentioned a little bit to it earlier, whether or not we were really ripping these people off. The truth of the matter is we weren't. We would get back letters many, many times that they loved what we were doing. And we actually did our very best to make these things sound good. And I think we gave them a real good product. And I never felt guilty at all in doing these things, ever.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Gene Merlino, who was also joined in the studio by Gene Marshall and John Muir. All of them spoke with us from the studios of KCLU-FM in Thousand Oaks, California, and Phil Milstein speaking with us from WBUR in Boston. The CD we've been talking about is called The American Song Poem Anthology. Do you know the difference between Big Wood and Brush? I'm not going to answer the question. A documentary about the song poem industry called Off the Charts, The American Song Poem Story, is airing next week on many PBS stations. And for more on song poems and more song poems, I believe, you can see our website, npr.org.
Do you know the difference between Big Wood and Brush?
Do you know
the difference between Big Wood and Brush?
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.